But when that full moon is as brilliant as the sun but as cooling as the moon, that's very unique. Because the moon is not as brilliant as the sun. But they say when shortly after Krishna disappeared, the Srimad Bhagavatam appeared. And the Srimad Bhagavatam appeared like the rising of the moon, with rays as cooling as the moon, but as brilliant as the sun. The Srimad Bhagavatam appeared like that. And then the sages ask, how did the Bhagavatam actually appear? You describe this in such a beautiful imagery. How did the Bhagavatam make its appearance in this world? Like we might say, how did Sita make her appearance in this world? And how did Ramchandra appear? How did Krishna appear? How did Srimati Radharani appear? How did Srimad Bhagavatam appear? So it's described in the following way in the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. That Srila Vyasadeva, he was present at the time Krishna was present. He was the father of Dhritarashtra and Pandu and Vidura. Details are described in Mahabharata. He was present simultaneous with Krishna being on the planet. Vyasadeva was present. So that was during Dwarpa Yug. But Vyasadeva has this capacity that he's Trikalagya. He can know things, or actually see things, beyond time. The three features of time are past, present, and future. But even better than what we can see at present, Vyasa can see everything at present perfectly, and he can see equally everything past and everything future. That was part of his qualification for being able to write the Puranic literature. He could go back in time and see it, but he could also go forward in time and see it. And he looked forward in time and saw what Kali Yuga would be like. And it was horrific. And so being a sage, a great personality, naturally he wanted to do something. So what does a great personality that's a literary personality do? He writes. Different persons may do different things. Vyasadeva was a literary Shaktivesh avatar, literary incarnation of the Supreme Lord. And so he decided he would take the knowledge of the Vedas that was existent during Satyug, Treta Yuga, and Dwarpa Yuga and put it in a written form. Because one of the things that diminishes in Kali Yuga is memory. Like, what were we doing 48 hours or 1 week ago, exactly at this time, what were we doing? What to speak of? Other things. Long, long ago. So, knowing that people's memory, according to the Vedic system, the students of the Vedas were so disciplined, so sharp, that they would be able to hear something just once, understand it perfectly, and remember it permanently. They didn't need tape recorders. They didn't need to take notes. Imagine if you attended college or school, those of you that are going to school. See a couple of kids here going to school. You going to school? Would you like it if you could just understand anything the teacher said just by hearing it once and remember it perfectly? Wouldn't that be nice? But it's Kali Yuga, we don't have that capacity. He knew that, and so he took that which was previously understood in that way and wrote it down. Because previously the Vedas were Shruti, they were passed on by oral tradition, through parampara, through disciplic succession, just like Krishna describes in Bhagavad Gita. Imam vivasvate yogam proktavan avya aham avyayam. Krishna personally spoke this knowledge long ago to the sun god Vivaswan. And Vivaswan spoke it to his son, Manu, Vaivasvata Manu. And Manu spoke it to his son, Ikshvaku. And in this way, the line of disciplic succession is passed. Evam parampara praptam imam rajarshayo vidu, Krishna describes in Bhagavad Gita. That's the Vedic system. Just by hearing. But when hearing and remembrance become diminished, the capacity to understand and the capacity to be able to present again perfectly by memory, it had to be written. So Vyasadeva decided to compile all the Vedic literature. That's a lot of literature. Vedic literature is vast, like the ocean. And to make it easy for people, he took the one Veda, Yajurveda, and divided it into four. Therefore, Veda Vyas. He compiled and he divided the Vedas. Rig, Sama, Yajur, and Atharva Veda. Each with their separate divisions as well. The portion of the Vedas that describes the ritual, describes the proper meter and pronunciation, prescribes the ingredients that have to be assembled and how the ritual is performed, and the philosophical, within the Upanishads, the meaning behind the whole procedure. In different divisions, Vyasadeva compiled all of this. Vast writing, huge undertaking. After he completed compiling all the Vedas, he then wrote the Puranic portion, the Itihasas and Puranas, the histories, the Smritis, that which describe the Shrutis. And then, to summarize everything, he compiled the Vedanta Sutra. Having completed everything, the Bhagavatam describes, he stepped back to see how it came out. Just like any project that you're working on. Something maybe at work, something maybe at school, maybe you're painting a painting or decorating your deity or designing something. You're deciding how you want your landscaping in your home done, something. And you do that something, and then you look back and see how did it come out. So Vyasa did like that with the Vedas. And when he was contemplating how it came out, he felt something that we're not unfamiliar with. He felt this pinch in his heart, the thing that said, something's not right. This dissatisfaction. Why is that dissatisfaction there? I've worked very diligently. I've presented things transparently, exactly what's in the Vedas, from the verbal form to the written form. Why am I feeling this insufficiency? Who's the spiritual master of Vyasadeva? Narada Muni. Narada Muni has an uncanny capacity to know when to appear in the right place at the right time and say the right thing. Narada Muni arrived at the hermitage of Vyas and saw, Vyas, you don't look so good. You don't look happy. In fact, you look despondent. Well, how is this possible? You're such an elevated soul, so filled with knowledge. What is it that's causing you disturbance? And Vyas said, I don't know. But I bet you know. Because you're so close to the Lord of the heart. You're intimately connected to the Supreme Lord. You're almost like Super Soul. So you must know what's in my heart. Can you tell me? why I'm feeling this way? It's a very beautiful exchange. And there's a long description where Vyasadeva, Narada, analyzes the things that Vyas did right. He said, you get an A. Didn't say it like that. You get an A in properly presenting everything that's there within the Vedas. Fine. But the persons who you're writing for, they're already attached to the misidentification with the body and the happiness that comes with the senses coming in contact with sense objects of the body, too much that's already there. And within the presentation that you've made, you've simply reinforced that. Yes, you've explained to them how desires can be fulfilled by making yajna unto various devatas and achieving the desire of one's heart. But the knot of identification with the body is still intact by that process. The very means of liberation from the entanglement of the worldly affairs, which is the message of the Vedas, is not sufficiently been explained. You've not sufficiently described the goal, the ultimate objective of all the Vedas. So he made the following recommendation. Very nice. Simple recommendation. Basically, it was do as I do. That's a good recommendation. If you make a recommendation, don't do what I do, but do what I say. That's not so strong. That's called hypocrisy. And nobody likes hypocrites. Don't do what I do what I say. Who wants to follow that person? But he described his own life. Well, the two instructions he gave him were sit down in trance, completely absorbed in samadhi, meditating upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Lord of the heart. And the second part was, in that state of trance, whatever it is that you have come to understand and realize, express that only. That topmost stage of spiritual realization. Write one literature like that. And so then he went through a whole explanation of describing how he did the same thing. He describes his previous life. Narada, in his previous life, was not Narada Muni. He wasn't even a Brahmana. Did you know that? He was an insignificant, obscure nobody. He was the son of a Shudrani that didn't even know who his father was. And his mother didn't know who his father was. One of those circumstances. And his father was absent, and he was just assisting his mother, small boy, 5-6 years old, serving his mother. And his mother was in charge of taking care of people that came to a dharmshala particularly during the rainy season. The saintly people that were on pilgrimage to various holy places, they would come and stay. And his mother would take care of their needs and he would assist them. So Narada describes, during the 4 months of the rainy season, he was bringing the meals to the saintly people. He was helping his mother with gathering their clothes and having their clothes washed and whatever little menial service there was that he could do as a small boy. And while they were having their discourses, he would sit and listen. And he was very attentive to what he heard, so attentive that they noticed this young boy is very attentive. So they developed some affection for him. And they started explaining more things and more things, and a very nice relationship began to develop. And they began instructing him in practices as well as teachings of practices of meditation and practices of chanting, sacred sounds, sacred mantras. They allowed him to take the remnants of their food. And he felt sanctified. At once he felt that he was relieved of this conception of the body and that his real identity was the eternal seat of consciousness within the body. And that was his real identity. Just a young boy. All these just from the association of saintly persons. And at the end of the 4 months of the rainy season, they left. After they left, he continued the same practices that they had given. He was remembering their teachings, and as the will of providence would play out events, his mother, one evening when going to the well to fetch some water, was bitten by a poisonous snake and died at once. But here's this little boy, 6 years old, no father, now no mother. What a great misfortune. What is a little boy going to do in that circumstance? But because of that association he previously had, he didn't become discouraged at all. He understood somehow God's will has just manifested. This provides me with an opportunity. I can now follow the way of the great sages, although I'm just small, and I can travel throughout the land. And that's what he did. He at once left and traveled all throughout the countryside, seeing, it's described in the Bhagavatam, jungles and cities and forests and towns and little villages, mountains, valleys, all types of people, all types of culture, all types of experiences. And every day, every morning, every evening, he would perform his devotional practice. So one time, in the early hours of the morning, he was seated beneath a banyan tree and was engaged in his chanting of his mantras and his process of meditation. And suddenly, with his mind very much concentrated, he saw the form of the Lord within his heart. And he was stunned and feeling very ecstatic. And as suddenly as that form of the Lord appeared, the form of the Lord disappeared. So he became startled. And he opened his eyes and looked around to see where the Lord had gone. But he didn't see the Lord anywhere. Then he heard the Lord's voice resonating like the rumbling of clouds and thunder, saying, I've shown you my special mercy. One normally does not see my form unless he's perfected in spiritual life. But because you're so young and so sincere, I wanted to show you my special mercy. Please continue as you have been doing through the rest of your life. You will not see me again, but at the end of your life you will attain me. Please go on in this way. And the voice stopped. And Narada describes he was just crying profusely. The mercy that had been shown to him and great feelings of separation from the Lord. And as instructed, he lived his life, the balance of his life, in that way. And at the end of life, in very elderly age, he describes the letting go of his mortal coil, the body, and simultaneously as there is lightning and illumination, means like no separation of time. Not like lightning and thunder, but lightning and illumination. Flash of lightning and the sky becomes very bright. Like that, he left his body and his spiritual form was manifest. He describes to Vyas, that was at the end of Lord Brahma's day. And so, along with all the material ingredients that make up creation and all the living entities, he was withdrawn within the body of Garbhodakshay Vishnu. And then again, upon the breathing of the next exhalation, the next day of Brahma, the universe was reconstructed. Brahma's next day began, and he appeared as the direct son of Lord Brahma, as Narada. So Vyasa was really moved by that explanation that Narada gave, and those parting words he repeated what his instruction was, and Narada left. So Vyasa followed his instruction. He went to take his bath, to purify himself, to prepare, sat in meditation, fixed his mind upon the personality of Godhead. And there's some beautiful verses that describe the realization of Vyasa, and that makes the basis of the whole of Srimad Bhagavatam. And then he composed Srimad Bhagavatam. That's how Bhagavatam made its appearance. It's described as the ripened fruit of the tree of Vedic knowledge, because we can get fruit from a fruit tree, but if you take the fruit before it's ripe, it doesn't have the same sweetness, same flavor. Many of the fruits that we get in America, they're imported from all over the place, and they're not ripe. And they, whatever they do, pump them full of some kind of gas so they'll stay okay as they bring them over here in a boat, and then somehow look like they're ripe. Anyway, it's not the same as something that's maturely grown from the tree, and you take it in its mature stage of ripeness and taste the fruit. Just not the same. Those of you from India, you're accustomed to this, you know the difference. Or even here in America, where it's like it's apple season. In some many places, you can go and pick your own apples off the apple tree. When I was a small boy, we used to do this. We used to go to the Great Lakes, and it was blueberry season. We had all these baskets and would pick all the blueberries, you know, like baskets and baskets. It's just not the same, the flavor of what you get in the supermarket and when you take ripe off the vine. It's just different. So the Bhagavatam is the ripened fruit of the Vedic tree of knowledge, because it's very singularly focused on, just as Narada had instructed, description of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, unmixed with any other consideration. The other considerations, they're called Purushartha. You're familiar with these. Dharma, Artha, Kama, Moksha. The idea in that sequence is that religious activity, Dharma, has a purpose. Everybody knows what the purpose is. It's you enhance your piety, your punya, and in that condition of enhanced punya, you prosper. Artha. And in that condition of artha, one can fulfill all desires. Kama. And ultimately, if one becomes very advanced in that procedure, one will aspire for liberation, moksha. So according to Padma Purana that describes about Srimad Bhagavatam, it's, and the Srimad Bhagavatam itself, its exclusive topic, it uses the language, the fifth dimension, or simply describing beyond liberation. Well, that's an interesting idea. What's beyond liberation? Beyond liberation means the ripened fruit of liberation, or the mature stage of liberation, or still in the liberated realm, or the absolute realm, Advaya Tattva realm. But it's the mature stage where prema, or love for the Supreme Personality of Godhead, becomes fully manifest. There's a nice verse in Bhagavad Gita. Some of you may know that verse. Brahma Bhuta Prasanatma Nasochati Nakangsati Samak Sarveshu Bhuteshu Mat Bhaktim Labhate Param. It's describing that stage, that's the liberated stage, where Nasochati Nakangsati, there's neither hankering or lamenting on that platform. Because hankering and lamenting, that's the business of the material plane. When you're at this Brahma-Bhuta platform, it's above the hankering and lamenting plane, the platform of material desire. It's on the platform of liberation, freedom from that. And it's prasanatma. It's very joyful to the soul, just by nature. Hankering leads to lamenting. What we hanker for, we wish we had something. And when you have that something, it's temporary, and after some time, it's taken away. Time destroys all things. All temporal things. So hankering for something that's limited by time, it's not advised in Bhagavad Gita or in Srimad Bhagavatam. So this liberated platform, Nasochati Nakangsati, also Samak Sarveshu Bhuteshu, where one sees with equal vision all living entities, not my group, some other group, us and them, groupism. I spent some time with some Chinese graduate students in Penn State University just before coming here. We were discussing this idea of groupism. Like, you know, there were nine doing their PhD studies at Penn State University, and in the course of studying there, they came in contact with devotional service, Bhagavad Gita, and they like it. You know, the notions presented there are new to them, but they feel very comfortable with them. So we were discussing this. Groupism, you know, you're Chinese, I'm American, and the person who was hosting us was from India. So, you know, we have our group. We identify according to the body and our culture and our language and so forth. But is that really who we are? The evening prior to that, well, that whole week at Penn State was yoga week. Because yoga is becoming very popular in America, and it's making its way into college campuses, so they had yoga week. And I was asked to be a guest speaker at one of the evening functions where the topic was yoga for peace. And then there's this phrase, it's a politically correct phrase these days, the inside-out approach. I didn't know what that meant until they described the approach, but it means it's not based upon adjusting behaviors, that's the outside approach, but it's what's inside you, and based upon what's inside you, then your behaviors will be automatically accommodated, appropriate behaviors. So you don't have to adjust the behaviors. You go inside. So I was very happy with that approach. The inside-out approach. And how do you become peaceful? Krishna says how to become peaceful. The last verse of the fifth chapter of Bhagavad Gita. So we spent some time with these Chinese students. Bhoktaram yogatapasam sarvaloka maheshwaram suradam sarvabhutanam gyatvamam shantim richati. We want shanti. We don't like the other. We don't like the kali, the quarrel and strife. We like being peaceful. But as long as there's identification with the body, we're going to have groups. And as long as we have groups, we're going to have clashes. This interest and that interest. Different centers of interest. And naturally, they're going to, even if we're like, you know, civilized, there's going to be some clash. What to speak of, lots of people aren't so civilized. And there's a bigger clash, bigger boom. Bigger friction. So how to have that which we want? It has to be something inside. And the something inside is to go beyond the body. And this is the liberated conception. When you go beyond the body, what do you find? The last line of that Brahma-bhuta prasanatma na sochati na kangsati samak sarveshu bhuteshu, seeing all living entities equally. From that liberated platform, mad bhaktim labhate param. Labhate means to attain or obtain. Labhate param. One can attain the param, the supreme position, which is mad bhaktim. Become Krishna's devotee. In the mature stage of being Krishna's devotee, it's love for Krishna. Or love for God. Love for the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Just as Krishna says, manmana bhava madbhakto madhyaji mam namaskar. He says it twice. There's one verse in Bhagavad Gita Krishna speaks twice. That's it. Manmana bhava madbhakto madhyaji mam namaskar. So this is the message of Srimad Bhagavatam. And how does one, through contact of Srimad Bhagavatam, attain that stage? There's one verse. All of this was just to prepare to speak on one verse. Very nice verse that is from Canto 1, Chapter 2 of Srimad Bhagavatam. It speaks directly about the importance of receiving Bhagavatam's message. I'll say it slowly. Nashta prayeshu abhadreshu nityam bhagavata sevaya. That's the first half. So, nashta means destroyed. Prayeshu means almost. Completely destroyed. What is it that's almost completely destroyed is abhadra. There is bhadra and there's abhadra. There's that which is auspicious, bhadra, and that which is inauspicious, abhadra. So all that is inauspicious within the heart is destroyed by the process of nityam bhagavata sevaya. Sevaya means service. Seva. Service. By serving the bhagavata. So here's one of them, the book Bhagavata, Bhagavata Purana. And by regularly hearing the message of Bhagavata Purana, one is rendering service. So regularly hearing, please consider, those of you that are particularly friends of our host, I didn't know anything about any of this before I started hearing. My college education, my undergraduate and graduate study and high school and elementary and all that stuff, I never heard the syllables Krishna until I was about 21. I didn't know any of these things. But just by hearing, Shrinvata, Svakata, Krishna, Punya, Shravana, Kirtana, the process is by receiving these transcendental messages of Vyas in the form of Bhagavad Purana, just by oral reception, just pouring nectar in the ear, going directly to the chamber of the heart and cleansing the heart of all abhadras. Like a great commercial. But it works. I mean, I'm living proof of that. I, like any American, grew up doing crazy American things, not knowing anything about anything. In the culture of no culture. But just by hearing Srimad Bhagavatam regularly. And the second is serving the person Bhagavata. Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya. So, our Acharya has described it. This word Bhagavata means in relation to Bhagavan. So in relation to Bhagavan, there's the person and there's the literature. The book Bhagavat and the person Bhagavat. And by serving them both, all that is inauspicious within the heart, abhadra, nashta, it's destroyed. Prayeshu, almost completely. It says almost completely because there are further stages by the very same process of hearing. They're completely destroyed. Or where one's determination, one's devotion becomes nishtha, fixed, firm, steady, unshakable. Even before the stage of perfection, and the stage of perfection that flows from that nishtha stage is described in Vedic literature, where one becomes, one develops a taste, ruchi. One becomes attached, asakti. One experiences transcendental emotion, nothing like material emotion, bhava, and mature stage of prema. So this Srimad Bhagavatam is meant to deliver all of that. Beyond the liberated stage, the stage of attachment, taste, spiritual transcendental ecstasy, bhava, and love of God, just from receiving the Srimad Bhagavatam. So we're honoring Krishna, appearing in the form of Srimad Bhagavatam in this nice event today. And thank all of you for coming and joining with us. Our plan is that we'll recite together. You brought Brahma Samhita prayers? We'll recite together some very beautiful prayers in honor of Krishna, the Govindam Adipurusham Tamaham Bhajami, prayers from Brahma Samhita. We can chant them together and then we'll have aarti for Srimad Bhagavatam and kirtan. Our host family have been very gracious. I have been not a very good recipient of your graciousness by not accepting this nice little seat. But otherwise, I mean, that's my fault. But he's received all of us and got somebody parking our car and making sure we have water and we're sitting comfortably. And that's receiving guests when you have a guest that comes to your home. What to speak of if you invite Krishna to come to your home? And he's invited Krishna to his home. And he's waiting for his being revealed, Krishna's, in the form of Srimad Bhagavatam. So we'll recite these prayers together in honor of Krishna's appearance here. Please follow along. We'll chant together. Ishvara Parama Krishna Sachit Ananda Vigraha Anadir Adir Govinda Sarva Karana Karanam Chintamani Prakara Sadma Sukalpa Vriksha Laksha Vritesha Sarapir Abhipalayantam Lakshmi Sahasra Shata Sambrama Sevyamanam Govindamadi Purusham Tamaham Bhajami. Auspicious mantras to prepare for receiving Srimad Bhagavatam. These prayers are describing the spiritual world and the relationship of the living beings that reside there. That's the heavenly region up there, where the kids are. And the process of creation and the Lord being the source of everything and how that creation flows from him. Very, very beautiful prayers. So, we'll have Aarti. Thank you all very much. Hare Krishna.